Hey friends, this is John, and this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the Nintendo Direct Mini for the Nintendo Direct Mini, featuring third-party partners for July 20th, 2020. And this was a really short Nintendo Direct, so there's going to be a short little recording here, kind of highlighting the things that they talked about, the handful of things. Years ago, they probably would have called this one a micro because it was so short. So let's start at the beginning here. It was not a live stream. It was just a video that dropped. They announced it late the night before. I think around midnight Eastern time, they announced a mini direct for the next, morning, depending on what coast you live on in North America, that is. On the East Coast here, it was at 10 a.m. And I was at work. I was panicking a little bit because I was on the clock. I had just gotten to work and I was just going to watch it real quick. And I was looking for the live stream screen on the Nintendo website and as well as the Nintendo YouTube channel, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So I ended up clicking over to the Game Explain feed where they were doing a live reaction to it. And it wasn't until I was watching them, they couldn't find it either. And it wasn't until they refreshed the Nintendo page and it appeared that I clicked over to watch it by myself, so without the commentary. Nothing against them. That's a cool channel, a very popular channel. I admire their optimism. They did a little prediction a couple of days before the rumor direct was confirmed, talking about how they could talk about all these Mario games and maybe an F-Zero and Breath of the Wild 2 and all this stuff. And it turned out that was quite optimistic because there were no first party games announced or discussed at this one. This was all just, as Nintendo said when they announced it, third party partners. So and I think they only talked about four, maybe five different games in this one because it was so short. I knew that there wasn't going to be much anything in this one. I saw it had an 8-minute runtime, 8.5 minutes thereabouts. But at the start of it, they mentioned it was the first Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase, which kind of implies that there would be a second and possibly even more than that. So I wonder if maybe this is going to be a strategy going forward over the next few weeks and months to roll these out. Just 5 to 8 minute videos at a time where they talk about a couple of games and updates here and there. I'm conflicted. There are things, one specific thing that I'll get to at the end that makes me think that maybe that won't be the case, but it would be great if we saw more of these, especially if they were such little bite-sized videos. I think overall, I prefer the longer ones to really get the hype train rolling and see all these cool announcements one after the other. But this kind of harkened back to a lot of the older Nintendo Directs where they would talk about updates to games that we already know about rather than having new announcements one after another. And then, the format of these Nintendo Directs is changing as the leadership at Nintendo has changed and continues to evolve their own strategies. I think I definitely prefer, I think as most people do, having these really fun directs with lots of different announcements, circumstances being what they are with new leadership and, that whole global pandemic thing. There's probably been a lot disrupted at Nintendo in a time of transition with leadership and having to, organize their game schedule more on the fly as they adjust to developing games in different ways than they have before. So are there more of these coming? Maybe. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to pick a side here and say, yes, we will have more of these in the coming weeks and months to sort of show the rest of the lineup. Because, outside of a handful of games, I think the only major retail game we have a solid release date for right now is Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Remaster, which is out in August. Past that, we really don't know much of anything. No More Heroes 3 has a 2020 release date. Bravely Default 2 has a 2020 release window. Who knows if that actually happens? Maybe that stuff ends up getting pushed. We will see. Time will tell. But on to the direct proper. The first thing they showed were some Cadence of Hyrule updates. The Crypt of the Necrodancer crossover with the Legend of Zelda series. That's a game that came out last year around this time, like late spring, early summer of last year. And they talked about three different updates. One is the first one is the character pack. This one is available now. But they added some new playable characters, including Impa, a character named Aria, Shadow Link, Shadow Zelda, and someone named Frederick. I'm going to assume that Aria and Frederick are maybe callbacks to the original Crypt of the Necrodancer game, because I did not recognize them from the Legend of Zelda series. Aria, in particular, looks like ultimate hard mode for the game, because if you take a hit or even miss a beat when you're playing with her, you just take a death, which is pretty intense, considering, like, these sort of rhythm games aren't easy. Like, if you miss a beat, you die and then have to reset to, you know, your last checkpoint. That's pretty hardcore to have that sort of level of required precision. But all the characters look like they play a little bit differently, like Impa with her range and Shadow Link and Shadow Zelda, you know, which is cool, because when you have characters that play a little bit differently, and when you restart the game, you're going to have the world laid out a little bit differently. You get a lot of mileage out of that sort of structure of a game. So you can play through it, you know, 4, 5, 6 times and have a significantly different experience. So, you know, there's a lot of bang for your buck with this game. The next pack, the next update is new music. It's going to have 39 new songs, and you'll be able to change the song at any time while you're playing the game, which is cool, because that will kind of affect, you know, if you're better at keeping up with the rhythm of a particular song, you'll be able to kind of just change it around to, you know, suit your style and kind of almost set your difficulty if you're just better at keeping up with certain songs, which is nice. And finally, the third update is going to be a new story campaign. They're calling it Symphony of the Mask, where you play as Skullcat. And I really appreciate the Majora's Mask reference. It is one of my favorite Zelda games. So it's cool that they're, you know, bringing some light elements of thematic elements of that game into it with Skullcat, and like changing your mask, change your abilities. I'm not exactly sure what that means. As far as changing abilities, I don't remember abilities in that game with any other characters. In a sort of like a grander sense, like this character has this specific ability, as it was more about like what weapons they were using. So, you know, maybe I'll see like some videos or something when that gets released to see what Skullcat actually plays like. They showed a little bit of footage of flipping masks, but I watched it a couple of times and I couldn't really discern what was happening there. And I've really only played through the game twice, so I'm by no means an expert at it. But the first pack, as I mentioned, is available. Others are coming later. And there is, of course, a season pass that comes with some bonus costumes, one for Link, one for Zelda. The bonus packs right now are listed at $6 a piece for all three of them, or you can buy all three at once for $15. So a little bit of a discount if you get it all. Oh, and there's also a physical version of the game that is going to be coming with all of the DLC content on October 23rd, which is cool. This game is coming out, you know, for all the collectors out there like me that like to have the games up on a shelf. So I don't know if they've listed a price for that just yet, but, you know, I think this game has a lot of content. If you haven't taken the plunge on it yet, I think it's well worth the asking price at this point. So it's a really cool game. It's really nice that it's getting the extra content, especially with, like I mentioned, the new characters, basically adding like a new campaign because of the way the layout changes every time you go through it. If I wasn't so highly engaged with all of these new eShop games that are coming out, I might have given it a shot. But as of right now, you know, I have a couple of eShop games that I'm still working through with CrossCode and the Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2 that I'm still chipping away at. And then, you know, Carrion comes out in a couple of days at time of recording here. So, you know, the eShop games keep coming. If there was a bit of a dry spell and I didn't have a wish list of 79 games on Switch, I might give this a shot, but there's just so much coming out that, you know, it's hard to backtrack to something like this when there's so many new experiences to be had. Next up, they showed a Rogue Company sort of cinematic intro, as well as some gameplay. And this is like a third person, maybe battle royale is the kind of genre that it's in at this point, but it's certainly not my kind of game, so I'm not great at describing and discerning what I'm seeing. I did look like it had some fun platforming to it, like some zip lines and some jumping around on shit, so that was kind of cool. It's an interesting element to this sort of like online competitive game. Splatoon had a little bit of that. I don't know how, I can't quite remember like how much those platforming elements figured into the online like multiplayer stuff in Splatoon 2. But anyway, like I'm not well versed in these sort of arena shooters in online competitive stuff, so maybe it's not that unusual. I do not have my finger on the pulse of that particular genre. Rogue Company is going to have cross-platform play. Also had something called cross-progression. I wonder if that means like cross-save, like your character builds and layouts and stuff, you'll be able to carry over from version to version. That's what it sounds like it means. We'll also have motion controls for aiming out of the box, which is great. I think that, you know, motion controls along with dual analog, like having those combination gives a really nice precision when it comes to these sorts of shooters. That's the way I would play these, you know, on the rare occasion that I do play them. And then during the direct, they also said there was more information coming later today. It was very weird because this is like Nintendo's informational video. Why not just give all the information immediately? I don't know. That was very strange. Like, there had a Nintendo Direct announcement to announce something later on. I don't know. But basically, they announced like three tiers to a Founders Pack that gives you access to this game before it goes free to play. There's like three different tiers. One's like $15, $30, and $60. I wasn't really interested in this game, like even in a free version, so I'm certainly not going to take the plunge on a paid version. And I don't know, like I don't have any, like I don't know enough about like what you're getting in each pack to have a serious objection to that sort of pricing structure, but it doesn't exactly sit right with me either. Like it feels like it would lend itself too easily to something like a pay-to-win type of structure, which I don't think is a fair or ethical way to structure like a price or an asking entry point for a game. I don't particularly like the sort of monetization strategies that most developers and publishers use for free-to-play games either. Most of the time just doesn't seem ethical to me, like that those sorts of things in the first place. So I don't know, like that sort of thing, I guess I'm just kind of like an old curmudgeon. I would just prefer like, yeah, tell me how much you want for the game and then I'll decide if I want to pay that or not. It seems like this is a way to sort of bait people in, I don't know, or get some upfront cash out of them for being able to access the game early and have some sort of advantage over people who might be playing later. I don't know. Again, I don't want to pass like definitive judgment on that sort of thing because I didn't care enough to look at it. But it has a bad taste. The third game they showed was WWE 2K Battlegrounds, and I'll be honest, the first time, like when the video was originally, I suppose, airing is the wrong word, but when it was first posted, I skipped right past this stuff. Then I watched it the second time I watched the video through. I'm not exactly sure why they had actual wrestlers like playing it and just kind of being obnoxious as they were playing it, but I don't know. Maybe, again, that's me just being an old curmudgeon. Maybe that means more to fans than it would to me, since I don't really recognize any of these people and don't really care what they think about playing the game. Maybe some people do. I don't know. Maybe that means more to some people. But hopefully this game is not as broken as that other one that came out, I think it was the year before last, 2018, something like that, that had all these technical issues. This one does have a more stylized like art style, visual style. So maybe that will kind of help with the tech issues, since they're not going for realism. Our buddy Mossy, friend of the show, compared it to NBA Jam, which makes perfect sense to me, is watching a little bit of video of it with like the really the heavy emphasis on bombastic moves and animations rather than that's the sort of realism. And then, that sort of thing, I think, lends itself really well to these sort of wrestling games, because WWE is, of course, about, from an outsider's opinion, it is about the sort of melodrama of it all, rather than, and like the sort of like athletic acrobatics of it all, rather than like the sort of like realism of wrestling. But at this point in the direct, I was thinking that this was a bit of a wash. There wasn't really going to be anything for me in here. But, I was thinking like, okay, this isn't going to be such a great one. That's okay. Maybe the next one will have a couple of things. So they got to like the 5-minute mark. And then they're like, okay, here's our last announcement. And there were 3 minutes left. So I was not optimistic about what they were going to show. And then, holy shit, it was Shin Megami Tensei. So I could tell right from the beginning this is going to be some sort of like they showed the Atlas logo and the sort of like mood of the trailer, certainly Shin Megami Tensei. It didn't look like it was going to be 5 right away because the visuals were very dated, and it turned out to be Shin Megami 3 Nocturne. I did not recognize it because I never played it. So, all of the footage, it's a dated visual style. Or that's not the right way to phrase it. Dated graphics with high resolution, because it was a PS2 game originally. And I got into Shin Megami Tensei on the 3DS when they did that cross-promotion with Fire Emblem Awakening, where if you had Fire Emblem Awakening and then you bought Shin Megami Tensei 4, which came out afterwards, a few months afterwards, they just gave you $30 eShop credit in the 3DS eShop. So that's when I bought Shin Megami Tensei 4, which is probably a game that I probably would have stuck on a wish list at the time and then forgotten about or picked up later on, but because they had that promotion, I decided just to take the plunge immediately. And it turned out to be one of my favorite 3DS games. And I am really pumped for this HD remaster, port, whatever you want to call it. Because it does have the HD resolution, but it's certainly a PS2 game. That's okay, because I'm excited for this one because I've had it on my PS2 Amazon wishlist for quite some time, and now I'll just be able to grab it on a more modern system like the Switch, where it's coming. I still have my PS2 easily set up in the spare room of my house. But it is tough sometimes to, that's where we actually record. I record in the spare room in my house. It's tough to sometimes come in here, especially with the kids, and set up the old system. The last game that I was playing in here was Shadow Hearts. And I got, I'm almost done with it. I need to just sit down and finish it. But just something about the convenience of the Switch. I probably split my time on Switch like 60% on TV and 40% handheld. But just having that sort of convenience, especially for an RPG, to go handheld and, not be confined to one space in front of the TV, I think would really help for an older RPG like this. Because, PS2 RPGs and the RPGs and the GameCube, that sort of era, were sort of held up, sort of lauded because of like the amount of content. Like, this game is 40 hours, this game is 60 hours. And a lot of that, you spend a lot of time engaging with the battle system and doing a lot of fights. So being able to do that in handheld mode while, ignoring something on the TV, just to have that sort of that background noise, that white noise to, help me not really feel the length of all the grind, I think is going to be beneficial for games of this era. But anyway, Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne is coming to Switch in spring 2021. I don't think that this would have been a great place to end it, even though I'm really into what this game should turn out to be. Because I really like this Shin Megami Tensei series. But it wasn't actually the last announcement. They actually showed a little bit of Shin Megami Tensei 5, which is great to finally see that game. I don't think we actually saw in-game footage, but we did get to see a little bit of the art and the animation. The demons look great, like the little flying devils that they showed. I think the human models, you know, are a bit stiff, a bit gangly and toyish. I don't mind it. They clearly spent a lot of time animating the demons and making them look really nice. And the humans, you know, maybe they'll do some updating. If this is how the game looks, if that's how like the character human models look in the game, I think it's fine. But nothing mind blowing. I'm overall really positive on it. It's a bit of a bummer that they didn't show any gameplay, like battles and stuff like that. But I think that I'm just overall really positive on it. I'm really looking forward to this game. They announced a 2021 worldwide launch. I think it's a pretty safe bet that this one is going to be after 3 Nocturne. So summer, probably fall. I'm thinking late 2021 is when we're going to see this game. So we're still over a year out from having this one on shelves. But I'm glad they actually showed something from this game and gave a window after it's been so long since it was announced. So, you know, it's a bummer it's not this year, you know, for more reasons than I want to play it. I think that it would be nice to have heard something else about what's coming in the second half of this year. But I'm really looking forward to both these SMT games. These games are hardcore JRPGs that require smart tactics in battle. It's not the kind of game series where you can just mash the attack button and win every random fight that way. Random fights that you get into, they all require like thought and meaningful decisions. At least until, you know, you discover like the pattern that they're going to throw at you. Like they're going to give you a battle that's going to have these types of enemies, and like once you discover all of their weaknesses and like what order you're going to want to do things, it's like a puzzle that you're figuring out, and the puzzle extends beyond just like the battle itself. It's like you figure out how to defeat the individual monsters, and then by doing so you'll learn like a good party configuration and configuration of the skills you want to have available and when you're going to use them in order to most effectively take out the assortment of monsters that they're going to throw you in any given random battle. So it's like a micro puzzle that you're trying to figure out, like what demon is going to be weak to what, and then the macro puzzle of, okay, what's the most effective way I'm going to deal with all of the potential demons that they're going to throw at me in a battle. So all of these battles, that you have to make meaningful decisions in all of them. I've never in any of these SMT games gone through the effort of filling out the compendium, the sort of Pokedex of demons, because there's a lot, and I always end up falling into the trap of I come up with this pool of demons, and no matter what ones I choose to try to fuse together, I always come up with the same like small handful of potential outcomes of all these fusions, and I've never quite figured out how to expand that pool. Maybe that's something that they'll make a little bit friendlier in Shin Megami Tensei 5 in this game. And I always get attached to the ones that I really like. Either the ones that look cool or the ones that have a good combination of skills that make them really effective in battle. Thankfully, I've never run into a situation in these games where I got attached to a super weak one, so it was not effective later in the game. Typically, by the end of the game, I have my favorites and they're good enough to pull me through to the end. So, in 4 and 4 Apocalypse for the 3DS, they made a bunch of smart, really friendly changes just in the way like they're showing you, you know, what demons are, what skills your opponents are going to be weak against once you've use that against them. So, you know, if they're weak against wind elemental magic and you've used that before on them, when you go to select wind elemental magic again, it'll remind you, hey, this is weak. And, you know, that sort of thing I don't like in Pokemon, but in Shin Megami Tensei, it's much less intuitive. Like, it's harder to infer what demons are going to be weak against what types of magic. But, you know, a lot of times, because, like, you might come across a demon and, you know, it's not really associated with any sort of, like, elemental alignment. You can't just, like, look at something and say, okay, well, this one's going to be more aligned with lightning elemental, so I need to use wind against it. Or this one's definitely a fire demon, so I want to use ice against it. You know, there are ones where you can, like, tell, but once you get further into the game, it becomes harder to make that distinction. Whereas in Pokemon, it's much easier to say, like, that is a grass Pokemon. I can tell that right away. That is a ghost Pokemon. I know that. So, and I also think it'd be because of the way, like, Pokemon, like, evolve into new forms, and they sort of have, like, more confined. Like, you're not going to ever, like, move your Gengar to something else. So, you know, you become more familiar with these different species of Pokemon because they are consistent and pervasive. Like, if you're fusing two fire demons together in Shin Megami Tensei, it's not a foregone conclusion that they will form a fire demon. So it's harder to keep track of what is going to turn into what and how that's going to change your alignments. So, you know, in something like Pokemon, because it is just easier to infer what is going to be weak or what type of monster something is going to be, I think that having that sort of information broadcast to you takes away from the sort of learning process you go through. And I actually think it's a bit of a hindrance to just give you that information up front, because then you don't have to, like, commit it to any sort of memory. It kind of takes away. And you know, it could be considered just like a sort of, like, times table, very mechanical memorization about what's weak to what. But the fun of it for me is sort of thinking about the different type combinations and how it's going to change its strengths and weaknesses. That's sort of the puzzle of Pokemon, because it is such a, it is just a one-on-one fight between two monsters. So you have to think about, like, that this is mine, and this is what I'm going to resist and be strong against, and this is the enemy, and that's what's going to be strong against and resist. And it's more about the strategy of the one-on-one fight rather than a construction of a party that's all going to act as one unit. Anyway, I'm rambling. I digress. It's a series that I really like, and I'm really looking forward to both 3 Nocturne and 5 when they finally come to Switch in 2021. So, that was the last announcement that they made in this Micro Direct that I've now tripled the length of in my own little ramblings here. And you know, after this, we're still pretty much in the same boat as we were yesterday and the day before, where we don't know much about, you know, 2020 past today. You know, it's still very nebulous about what they could do. And maybe there's another Nintendo Direct incoming very quickly where they're going to, you know, show more of their first-party stuff. Maybe they'll show more third-party stuff. We'll see. You know, we have announced 2020 release dates for Bravely Default and No More Heroes. There could be delays there. Other than that, it's just a big mystery. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that Nintendo completely relies on these sort of third-party games, like the two that I mentioned just then, and Bayonetta 3. This shifts their third or first-party focus entirely to 2021 and just let themselves coast with, like, Animal Crossing and just like the huge catalog of games that they have now. They brought in a lot of new people with Animal Crossing. And, you know, if you look back to the Wii days, there were a lot of times where they just kind of coasted on the success they already have and the library of like the Wii branded stuff that they already had to carry them through. That's not a very exciting prospect, but it's possible. I hope they don't, because, you know, it's always fun to get new games and new announcements and stuff. I personally think that Bayonetta 3 is a 2020 game. That could just be me being optimistic, but I think that we're going to see that game relatively soon, and it'll get a release date, you know, for shortly after it gets officially, like, finally revealed with gameplay. So I'm trying not to jump to conclusions or panic until we get another one of these third-party showcases or even a first-party showcase to show us what we actually have coming in 2020. I'm also trying to temper expectations, and I'm keeping an eye on my Switch wish list for my eShop games, because as I mentioned, it's 79 games long at this point. So there's a lot of stuff I could go back to if we end up with a pretty dry back half of the year. I hope we don't, because new games are always fun. But even if we do have, you know, a pretty barren fall and winter, you know, there are games available that I have not played that, you know, are available to play. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. But, you know, 2020 and outside of gaming has been, you know, a pretty rough year so far. It's nice to have those bright spots. So that's going to wrap up this little micro episode for the Micro Direct. In just a couple of days, the three of us will be back together to record the retro show, which is going to be fun. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the month with the official show with a discussion of some new game announcements and new releases. So, till next time.